Dubai Eye 103.8.
It is a warm welcome to Sabrina Salhi. She joins us live in studio. Sabrina, lovely to see you again.
Good morning, Tom. Lovely to be here.
Well, thank you so much indeed for your time. Sabrina is the founder of Unveiled DXB. Tell us more, for those that missed out on the explanation last time, what does Unveiled DXB do?
We make very fun events for ladies only. Sorry, boys. We have entertainment evenings featuring live female performance, a female DJ, gourmet food, pamper stations, all the lovely things we ladies enjoy.
Good stuff. And things have obviously been going very well since you launched the brand. You have found a niche in the market. You've found a huge sort of audience out there as well. What's on the horizon? What have you got planned before the end of the year?
So we've got another one coming up on the 4th of December. And we'll be doing monthly 2019. We're partnering up with Bride Dubai as well. So we'll be hosting a ladies' day, VIP lounge and an after party. And then we're going to Abu Dhabi and Sharjah as well soon, hopefully.
Look at that. Yeah. On the road, on tour.
Yeah.
On tour. What goes on tour stays on tour.
Yeah, that's
That's more to find out. If people want to find out more about the brand,
www.unveildxb.com or follow us on Instagram, unveildxb.
We're going to get to your stories in just a few moments' time. I just want to get your thoughts on a story that's developing here this morning. It is this topic of delivery riders out there. Dev, thanks very much indeed to you for your text message. Dev says, come on, Tom, we need a bit more expansion on this. The story needs a bit more background. Well, article written yesterday in the national newspaper on the back of a survey conducted by the campaign group Road Safety UAE last year, which said that 77% of delivery riders said other vehicles cut in front of them on a regular basis, with 68% believing other motorists are inconsiderate to them. 17 motorcycle riders were killed and 122 accidents took place on Dubai roads alone last year, according to police. Officers in Abu Dhabi have led calls for riders to take more care on the roads after revealing motorcycles were involved in 682 accidents in the past 5 years, resulting in 42 fatalities. The article speaks to motorbike delivery riders. It speaks to companies responsible for motorcycle delivery riders. And I don't think there's anybody out there that would wish ill or harm upon any motorbike delivery riders. I suppose that the concern about this piece is that at no point is a driver of a regular car asked for their opinions. And is it all down to drivers around motorbike delivery drivers causing the problems? Or, dare we say it, could there be some, not all, motorbike delivery drivers who, in their haste to deliver their food hot to their destination, or in their haste to get to a restaurant in order to fulfil the time requirements of a delivery, are pushing the limit a little bit? Gemma Kibben.
Well, Mo, thank you for your message. What's more frightening, a bike in your way or a Land Cruiser speeding up behind you, flashing like there's a thunderstorm? I'm completely with you, Mo. Yes, they do risk their lives. I completely agree that they drive recklessly and we can absolutely address that, but they are under pressure and they shouldn't be under such pressure. Yep, they've got to get the food to you. It depends how many orders. Let's talk food delivery drivers, just as an example. If they're delivering to four people, then there's going to be cold food in there. So that's daft. Deliver to one person, come back to your destination, deliver again, which is what one of the companies here does. A few probably do that as well. So if you're talking about people delivering food and courier drivers and drivers on bikes, I really don't think it's that bad. I think you just need to back off in your big car, quite frankly.
Surav has been in touch with us as well, saying there's no excuse for rash driving. Have you ever seen a school bus driver go berserk? Over and above safety, they respect time and traffic discipline. Surav, thank you for that one. Maria has been in touch, saying, morning all, come on guys, motorcyclists are so vulnerable and I fear for them all the time. Keeping all that in mind, they need to act on the road as though they are a car. That's the rule. They just stick themselves through any physically possible crack. That is not how they should be driving. I'm actually scared of them. Thank you for that one. Another one that's just come through: just because you're sitting in a vulnerable bike doesn't mean you can just drive like a maniac and expect everyone to do everything in their effort to accommodate their behaviours. Look, we're trying to get balance here. I don't want to blame all motorcycle delivery drivers. There are some very good motorcycle delivery drivers. I'm just saying that a lot of them do take it to extremes. I was one a couple of days ago that I was saying on the roads of the UAE, flying down Sakeem Road at a rate with just one hand on his motorcycle, the other hand checking out the delivery map on his mobile phone, Sabrina. I mean, I know this is illegal in a car and people can get away with it in a car to a certain degree by trying to hide the phone, etc. On a motorcycle, you can't get away with that.
No, you really can't get away with that. You've got nowhere to hide. Picking up on that, I think that what we have to remember is a lot of the drivers come from countries that have got more lax driving laws. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time it's a cultural thing. It's a combination of things. It's a pressure from their company to deliver, as Gabby rightfully said. So I think that if we want to tackle the issue, rather than sort of blaming the drivers, we should maybe turn our sights to the companies who can do more to support them, give them driving lessons, give them, like Gabby said, less food to deliver, maybe one or two and then come back. That should help tackle the problem, I think.
Brina's with us here in studio talking through some of the big stories of the day, some of the stories that have caught her eye in the paper review. And one of those is the Dubai population. It continues to grow.
Yes, the population of Dubai has now surpassed 3 million. That's a growth of 7.5% from the third quarter of 2017, up 2,400 residents by the end of the third quarter.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is amazing how the growth of this. These are figures that come from DSC, the Dubai Statistics Centre. I'd love a day at the Statistics Centre. Is that really geeky of me? I'd love to spend a day in the Statistics Centre and just collate. Imagine how much we could get for the agenda.
Oh, I would too.
The agenda could go to town, couldn't they?
Study finds. I would love it. Yes, indeed.
But this is what amazes me is that we're talking about the 3 million mark. In Dubai alone, that's not taking into account the other six emirates around the UAE. So we're seeing population growth, population boom here in line with the opportunities.
Exactly. Actually, His Royal Excellency Arif Al-Mahiri said that the rise in population reflects Dubai's growth as a dynamic economic and tourism hub. And over 37% of Dubai's active daytime population come from other emirates.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fueling the roads debate at the moment. Yeah. The traffic that we're seeing in and out of the region. Let's have a look at some of the breakdowns from this one, because this is what's been talked about a lot. The gender split. Once you sort of bear down into this, it makes sense given the fact that we have such a large migrant population here, a lot of people here working as well. 70% of residents are male, 30% are female, which works out around 233 males to every 100 females. Two and a bit men to every woman out there at the moment, which is in keeping, I suppose, with the way that that the population has grown in years gone by, and the physical growth here.
Yeah, one of the reasons put forward to explain that is the way the Dubai landscape is. So most of the population consists of males, either single or that work here without their families, and they're supporting their families from back home.
The age thing was the one that interested me as well. The fact that stats show that more than 500,000 residents are between 30 and 34 years of age, while the 20 to 44 age bracket accounts for almost two-thirds, just over two-thirds of the resident population at the moment, which again would drive this theory of it being a young professional, or certainly a city that is attracting young professionals.
Absolutely. I mean, I came to Dubai when I was in my early 20s, and I came here for exactly that reason. I saw it as a thriving hub. It was exciting. It's a new city, and it's very alluring for the youth that want to come here. And it's a hotbed for entrepreneurialism as well. So many people come here to advance their careers, to start new businesses. So it's very attractive.
Our very special guest in studio, Sabrina Selly, is the founder of Unveiled DXB. She's here with us in studio to talk through some of the stories that have caught her eye. We've talked population. Now we talk the law. Nine UAE laws you could accidentally break and get into legal trouble. Sabrina.
That's right. I came across this article. I thought it was very interesting. Some of us may know these, some of us may not. For those that don't, let's go through them. So the first one is crossing the street randomly, so not at pedestrian crossings, zebra crossings, which can land you a fine of 400 dirhams. Did you know that?
I think I did, but I didn't realise that the fine was so much. And I knew that... I'll tell you why there was confusion for me, because I know that we see jaywalking, we see a lot of initiatives against jaywalking here, but the examples that have always been shown to me are those people that try and cross major roads and put themselves and drivers on the roads at danger. Whereas you see people jaywalking everywhere. You know, we look out the window here and you can see people walking across roads at non-designated areas.
Right.
And yet that could land you in trouble. That could get you 400 dirhams.
Absolutely. I think they've got their intentions right. So the intention is to stop it from happening and ultimately it's to keep people safe. Mm. So I don't know. It depends where they choose to enforce it and whether, you know, you get caught doing it or not. Point Look, is you have to be safe.
Metro bridges makes complete sense. Pedestrian crossings across major roads makes complete sense. And zebra crossings should make complete sense. However... with that in mind, a little plea to the powers that be, RTA and otherwise, that given time and given, of course, the effects of the weather here and usage, a number of zebra crossings they've sort of faded in many ways. There's one literally out here, which I have trouble with every single day on the road out there, which is, and no driver is wrong to not stop. Because it's neither here nor there. Am I right in thinking that, Joe, or not?
Yes, you are, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you see, I love the pedestrian bridges here, and I'm going to have a moment, because there is one near, it's on the 311, and it's not far from Dragon Mart. And it is always busy with people walking across the pedestrian crossing. It's a big pedestrian bridge, and people with bikes crossing, to and fro. There need to be more pedestrian bridges to cross the big major highways, to prevent people taking their life into their own hands and trying to cross those roads.
But is this, I mean, there's somebody crossing that pedestrian crossing outside. It's not great radio because we're just pointing at somebody outside the window here. But basically, I set the scene. I mean, there is a pedestrian. Look, here's a guy. He's just coming up to it now. Look, okay, let's see. But see, the car has stopped. And yet, if you look at the pedestrian crossing on the road, it's faded. You wouldn't blame somebody in a car to stop for that one.
So note to RTA, get your paintbrushes out and come and paint that zebra crossing.
come and redefine that zebra crossing. But that's a good one. So that's 400. What are the other ones?
Okay, so the second one is photography. So taking or publishing a picture without permission is illegal. And if somebody chooses to report you, you could land yourself with a hefty fine of between 150 to 200,000 dirham. Mm-hmm.
Good one. Others that have made it onto the top 10?
Texting in foul language. Yeah. So you're not allowed to do that on WhatsApp.
Yeah.
And if you do that and somebody reports you, you could land yourself a fine or even find yourself in jail.
Amazing.
So be careful. Hand gestures as well. If somebody complains, if you've kind of shown them a crude hand gesture, even if you think it's something that's very, you know, normal, you have to be sensitive to the UAE laws. You could land yourself in jail or get a fine for them.
Tell you what, I've got a problem with this one. I'm not got a problem with people doing, you know, negative or offensive hand gestures, because I think that's completely wrong and needs to be pulled up. It's the definition of a hand gesture as well.
Yeah,
I'm a waiver. I'm a thanker as well. If somebody lets me in, I will raise my hand to show them behind and say thank you very much indeed.
Yeah.
Now, what's to stop somebody defining that as a negative hand gesture? And how do you prove it as well? It's one of those really awful ones. It must be such a grey area.
So it is tough, but I think a lot of us can kind of agree on.
Oh, it's just about good manners, though, really, at the end of the day. Come on. Really? Texting in foul language? I don't do that. Imagine writing down rude words and sending them to people and hand gestures.
Yeah. No, but you do. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but if you're texting me or if you're texting mates or something like that, then would you slip into foul language?
No.
Huh, I would.
I think the point is, like, it's the context that it's used in. So if you're using it to offend someone or call them names, that's when you would get in trouble for it if they take you up on it. And same with hand gestures. If you're waving someone by, it's a nice thing. Nobody will bat an eyelid. But if you're you know, doing something else, then that could land you. Or, for example, road rage. If somebody's in their car, they get really cross and they wind their window down and they, you know, gesture at someone and a policeman's there, you could get in trouble for something like that. So be careful.
And the others are, as we fast approach the break, what else makes it onto the list?
Yep, sure. So washing your car in a public or paid parking space, not allowed to do that. Take your car to the car wash or use a damp cloth. It's for the larger purpose of water conservation and sustainable living. Another one, littering. I think we all knew that. And a bounce check, even if you've forgotten to inform the person, it's a criminal offence. So make sure you have enough in the bank account before you send them out. And also raising money for charity, online or offline. You need to make sure you go through the right charitable organisations. You're not allowed to raise it yourself. They need to do the fundraising on your behalf.
Yeah.
And lastly, sharing secrets.
Oh, no, I didn't get this one. We're not allowed to share secrets. No.
What's
secrets.
The tea? Oh, dear. Yeah.
I think it all ties into privacy, defamation, and confidentiality. They're just trying to stop a slippery slope.
Yeah.
So you're not allowed to go on and complain about a company openly. You have to be sensitive. If somebody shares some sensitive information from you with you, then you can't just divulge that. So. It's all about having good manners.
Careful what you say around the water cooler. Stop talking about Brian in accounts, okay? No secrets. We're in conversation with Sabrina. She's here in studio working through some of the stories that have caught her eye. Sabrina Sally is the founder of Unveil DXB. We've been talking about the laws that you might that thought you might not be breaking, but could well be on a daily basis. What about food prices here in the UAE? Now, I, for one, think that my cost of living and my weekly shop has gone up. Am I right, Sabrina?
You could well be right. With the introduction of the VAT recently, I think we've all felt the pinch a little bit. But I think in the past 10 years, it's probably been at the most affordable that it's ever been. And we've got more options when you go to the supermarket now than we've ever had before. Particularly when it comes to things like organic produce and produce coming from the UAE.
Interesting research, this one. One that got me thinking as well. It was The Economist magazine, wasn't it? Who came up with the...
Khalid Chimes got it from The Economist magazines.
Yeah, Global Food Security Index 2018, suggesting that food prices in the UAE are the fourth most affordable globally.
Right.
That's thanks to the stronger dirham, improved domestic food production through new technologies and the shifting focus to safe havens such as Eastern Europe, Australia, and North and South America. If I were to say to our listeners out there listening at the moment, wherever you are, that you are in a country where the food prices are the fourth most affordable globally, is that something you would concur with or not? Maybe it's just because we've seen a significant increase in the prices of foods, but we are not comparing it with other parts of the world where prices of foods are also going up. But it just seems to me here that things are getting more expensive when it comes to your shopping and certainly your weekly shop.
I agree with you. We're a family of four. I have two kids and two cats, and I've certainly felt that the grocery shop has increased. But saying that, I think there's more healthy competition now. I don't think we've ever had quite as much of a variety of eggs to choose from ever before. So I think healthy competition is a good thing. And I think you also have to be quite savvy. And it depends on what you're buying. That varies from family to family. I mean, I was actually on a Facebook group the other day, and they were discussing how much everybody spends on their monthly bills on a grocery shop, and it varied hugely. Some were saying they spend like around 2,000, others were saying 4,000, 5,000, 6,000. So I really think that it depends on family to family and what you're buying and, you know, where you're from, what kind of vegetables you use, and so many different things.
A friend of mine, I should say, came back from the summer, been away for the summer for a long time. So, and it's just he and his wife, and they've got nothing. They had nothing in the house. They've been away for like 3-4 months. So it was one of those ones where they had to come back and refill everything because everything had gone. And he said that he went to a very reputable supermarket here, chain of supermarkets here. And he filled 3 trolley fulls of goods and necessaries and foods and bits and pieces and everything like that. And he's a healthy eater, so sort of thinks above. And he took 3 trolleys to the checkout desk. I think the bill was over 4,000 dirhams or something like that for one checkout for the two of them. And it sort of made it go, wow, okay. But then I suppose, you know, if you are kitting out your house, you know, so you take a big bottle of olive, you take a big bottle of this, you've got a big bottle of that, all those things that you haven't got or you're not adding up to.
I'm just trying to imagine him pushing 3 trolleys.
He said it was like an articulated lorry. You know, it's like an articulated lorry. So you put one at the top because you know how they all sort of connect together when they're empty.
Yeah,
you sort of did the same. But yeah, exactly, a locomotive.
That's ridiculous. Yeah. That's excessive. I'm sorry. You do not. Yeah. You just keep by pasta.
Wouldn't he though? Because no, he's one anti-pasta guy.
Brown,
you know,
pasta, yeah, whole wheat pasta. What,
exactly. It's not that difficult. You just need like 4 punnets of blueberries, and you're up to about £1,000 anyway, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Food is extraordinarily expensive. So, I do think there is
mother of 3, Jo McKibben. You live in a part of the world that has. It's the 4th most affordable globally for food prices.
Mm. I beg to differ. I need to further look at the research of this story.
She needs to look at the stats herself.
And I am a very good shopper, and I shop around, and I shop carefully and well, and I buy good food and healthy food. I think healthy food is expensive to buy here.
I don't take anything away from food security. I think a lot's been done for food security and supplying of food to people, but price-wise, I think it's different.
Yeah, I wanted to actually say something. It actually depends on where you come from as well, because that's what you'll be comparing it to. So I'm from the UK, but I also lived in Australia. Australia is really expensive. Mm. And the same way we kind of hold out and say, oh, let's just wait until we go back home and get these things that we've got on our list, it works the other way around. So my friends from Australia buy it from here to take back home.
Wow.
Just to give you an idea, deodorant in Australia cost at the time, like 8 years ago, $6. $6-$7 just for like a small deodorant. And I remember looking at that thinking, that can't be right. But it really depends on where you come from. Some countries will be more expensive and then you'll find it cheaper living here.
I couldn't agree. So, people taking deodorant back to Australia from here, it's much like
I don't mean to.
No, that's fine. It's much like me taking my Marmite from the UK back to here, you know, because I know that I'm going to get it cheaper.
I love to know what people bring in their suitcases. My mum and dad are coming in a couple of days and I'll be loading them
up. What's on the list?
Or smoked salmon. Smoked salmon. Decent smoked salmon.
I bring makeup wipes.
There you go.
We are still in the company of Sabrina. She's very kindly stuck around a little longer to get through some of the stories we haven't had time to address yet. One of those is UAE Gender Balance Council, which is seeking to increase its female presence. Where, Sabrina?
It's seeking to improve its female presence in the Federal National Council and across the board. They've set up an initiative where they're going to be supporting these government entities to make sure that there's initiatives put in place to improve gender balance, basically.
Is that something that you're seeing? I mean, obviously, with the efforts that you and the individuals that you interact with through Unveil DXB as well, is enough being done, not just within the FNC, which is a great initiative, but across the city, across the Emirates as a whole?
I think that we're very fortunate to live somewhere that's taking this so seriously. I think traditionally this is a conservative culture where there has been, or there is, still continues to be, but they're working towards it, a huge divide between genders. And I think that they're working very hard to try to bridge that gap. And it's evident when you look at these, government agencies where you can see that there's a greater presence of females there. So it's not necessarily how many females there are right now. It's the fact that they're taking initiative to try to close that gap. I think that's commendable.
Do send your thoughts through on that one. And we've got time for one more as well. Another story from the national newspaper that caught the eye of Sabrina. And another story that features on the UAE and safety here.
Yes. So the National and the Khalid Times said that the UAE is the world's 2nd safest country, having been beaten by Iceland. I think that it's very safe here. It's one of the things that, you know, that's one of the reasons why we like to live here. It's very, very safe. So I agree.
And that's still one of the attractions, do you think, that brings people to this part of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. I can't say that there are many other, you know, countries around the world where I can leave my front door unlocked or, you know, leave my car unlocked, run into the shop, and I'm quite confident that nobody's going to come in and, you know, break my window, for example. So it's very safe, I think.
It's according to data from Which Travel, which ranked the world's top 20 holiday destinations using data collated by the World Economic Fund, the World Risk Report, NHS Fit for Travel website, and the UK Foreign and Commonwealth Office's Terrorism Assessment Risk to assess overall safety around the world. UAE is the world's second safest place to visit, beating in countries including Singapore and the United States of America and many of Europeans' most popular destinations. Iceland topped the index, which is bizarre, because isn't Iceland full of volcanoes?
Yeah, but I don't think they're talking about that sort of safety, are they?
I think they're talking about least likely to be murdered.
By a polar bear?
I think that you do think about countries if they're dangerous to go to. I think if you said, oh, let's go to Mexico, I would be slightly concerned about going to Mexico. I think, oh, I don't know whether I really want a family holiday in Mexico. Mm. I don't want to be stuck in a resort. So I think that you think about it more if you're going to a dangerous place. And I think we just kind of, I think there is a part of us that take the safety here for granted. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Because my front door is often open, which obviously I'll start locking now every night.
I mean, it's great kudos for the authorities here. And it's the latest endorsement for the country's reputation for safety, which has been backed up by the fact that the UAE passport made it into the number three on the level for the passport index as of yesterday as well. So it continues its rise for visa-free travel around the world. Iceland topping the list. So we've got a bit of work to do there to see if we can't knock Iceland off the top of this index. UAE coming second. Singapore coming third, goes without saying. It's a very safe city. It's a very structured, organised city and environment as well. It's the two that follow straight after that, which I find interesting. And it's interesting to ask you two, because both of you have spent time in these respective countries. Spain, Joe McKibben, makes it onto the list for safety as well, coming in at number four.
Maybe it is safer now than it was when I lived there, but it was certainly, and it still is, isn't it? You have to be really careful when you're in the big cities not to have your pockets picked. That's an interesting one.
And Australia, Sabrina, coming in at five.
Australia was relatively safe when I lived there, but they have their fair share of crime rates as well. It's safe compared to other countries, for sure. For example, some of the worst ones were South Africa, Turkey, Thailand, India and Mexico. Mm-hmm. So comparatively speaking, they're a lot safer than them.
Makes for interesting reading, that's for sure. Yeah. Listen, really appreciate your time this morning. As always, it's been great. If people want to get in touch with you, Sabrina, and all the team at Unveil DXP and find out about the next events, best way to do that is
www.unveildxp.com or follow us on Instagram, unveildxp. Thank you for having me.
You've got a date for your diary?
4th of December.
4th of December is the next one.
At the Steigenberger Hotel, the backyard.
Okay, so if you fancy going to see Sabrina and the rest of the team, how many are you attracting at the moment in terms of numbers?
Around 100 ladies.
Wow!
Yeah.
Now that is one big money minibus, isn't it?
Getting there slowly.
Do you get
slowly.
One of them stretcher limos?
Yeah? We should. That's a good idea. Thanks, Tom.
If any of the limousine companies are listening in at the moment, there is an opportunity here. Okay. 4001, if you'd like to have your say. Thank you very much indeed, Sabrina, for being with us here this morning.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.